Welcome to Q&A with TNK. They've surfed the interwebs. They've contemplated, ruminated, and speculated. They've checked the teletype, and now they're ready to answer your questions. Here are your hosts, Tiffany and Kristen.
Hello, and welcome to Q&A.
With TNK, I'm Kristen.
I'm Tiffany. We have another special guest today.
Whoop, whoop.
Allison, you want to tell us who you are?
Sure. My name is Allison, and I am a deaf educator. So I work in the preschool setting from the time they turn three till about, you know, a little after their fifth year and they go into kindergarten. I have worked at the school that I've worked at for probably a little over 16 years. I started working there immediately after I left college and as a classroom assistant. And then I went to grad school down in Portland and came back and started teaching there. I usually hovered around like second to third grade. And then about 7 years ago, I moved down into the preschool kindergarten realm and have been really transforming it, actually, which is kind of a cool thing.
Yeah. I love hearing that you started in the older grades and made a choice to go down.
Yeah.
I feel like more often than not, people start in preschool and they're like, oh, I'm ready to be a real teacher. I'm going to move up.
I mean, as a classroom assistant, I was like first grade and I was down in kindergarten and then back up. And then it's such an interesting sliding door, right? Because with like second and third grade, you have all of this like there's homework that you have to grade. You know, and there's, you know, all this stuff that you have to do, like after the kids are gone or whatever. And for me, it's in the preschool world, like all of that energy that you are spending outside of the day is then slammed back into the hours where you're actually with the kid and or, you know, like front loaded in, you know, the planning around, you know, what you're going to have in the environment and how you're manipulating all of that. So it's just such a different allocation of energy that goes into preschool. So
Yeah, it is. That was very eloquently stated.
It was. It's something that I've never like chunked apart.
Yeah. So I met Allison at a conference and we were in a messy sensory play class. And we were making Play-Doh. It was like an open Play-Doh station, right?
Yeah, right.
And she was kind of across from me and we were mixing up the Play-Doh and she said, "This is so cool. I wish I could do more of this with my kids." Can you expand on that a little bit, Allison?
Totally. So working in deaf education. So my program is so deaf education in general, there's a huge spectrum of how you can be educating children. So a lot of people, when they find out their baby's deaf, they'll have the, you know, cochlear implant surgery. And then some people choose to send their children to listening and spoken language programs where there's no sign language at all. And then there's some people kind of go the more sort of culturally deaf way, and that they may or may not have implants, but they decide not to do cochlear implants, or they do decide to do cochlear implants, but the mode of communication is voice off ASL. And my program is kind of in the middle of that spectrum, in that everything that I say is also spoken using a sign system that perfectly matches spoken English. So most people don't necessarily understand that there are more than one sign system in even America. A lot of people think that it's an international language or it's a universal language or it's all of that. But even in, you know, the United States, there's multiple different systems of sign language. And so because everything that I do with my kids is spoken and signed simultaneously, sensory play becomes really interesting.
Right, yeah.
Because you have your hands in these water beads, and it's amazing. And then if you really want to be clear in communicating with your kids, A, you have to get their visual attention. B, you have to sustain it.
Yeah.
And then C, you got to use your hands to, you know, be giving all of them that visual support you're saying out of your mouth.
Right.
So, it's challenging as the facilitator of that play, but it's also challenging for them in being able to have clear access with their peers, too. And especially, like, when you're doing sign language, if you're talking about a color or something, like, so say we're mixing flour with water and red food coloring or
right. Water
liquid watercolor, and you wanting to be talking about red, you literally touch your mouth.
Then yeah.
You get into the situation of like signing red, and then you've got flour on your face,
and
so there ends up. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yes.
What I ended up. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Allison, can you hang on for just a second? We've got the annoying buzz happening over here again.
Okay.
And I want to make sure everyone can hear you all the way. So hang on just a second.
Okay.
We're back.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we were talking about
sensory play
and integrating literacy into sensory play, especially when that means using your hands to communicate.
Yeah. Yeah. So much of all of the built-in awesome language development that happens with typically developing kids is all that incidental learning that they're getting from all their peers. Right? Like, Billy's over there talking about how it's so wet and, you know, like, hey, it's slimy and gooey and it's, you know, all this other stuff. And look what happens when you do this and blah, blah, blah. And all of that communication is happening simultaneously and other kids are just incidentally absorbing it. And that same access doesn't happen for my kids. So it really becomes this,
it's crazy.
It really, really becomes this. Which has kind of just been what my life has been in the last 5 to 7 years. It's like trying to use best practice in the way that I know works with all the research and everything that's awesome about early childhood education and schemas and sensory, all of that stuff. But then how am I, what can I do to marry it with best practice in best education? And best practice in language acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
And so so it's been a really interesting journey.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And I learn, you know, it's interesting because a lot of times people will know a lot about the early childhood part or they'll know about the deaf ed part, but they're not trying to figure out how to merge them.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like on some levels, you know, that I'm kind of doing it on my own, you know? And so, which is why it's been so awesome to have like all the different podcasts and be able to glean what I can glean and then sort of filter it then through my own body and my own knowledge and then figure out how to output that in a different way, which is really cool.
Yeah. You need to start a blog.
Yeah.
I know, right? Yeah. I know. I'm aware. It's sort of like, it's like this little noise that kind of just like kicks every once in a while, you know, and I'm like, yeah, okay. Maybe later. We'll see.
In your synthesis journey, what have you found merges those two different aspects the best? Are there like certain does that question make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
things that really work well in your room.
Yeah. So I was sort of thinking about this last night about like what were the moments that really like had a pivotal impact on me around, okay, yeah, this feels right. how do I do more of this?
Yeah.
And so, like, way early on, I had a little kid who, no expressive language. she would imitate my signs if I signed them for her, but she herself used very, very, I think at home probably there was more than, you know, but I hang out with her 3 hours a day at that point, you know?
Yeah.
And so we were outside at recess and I had brought out the parachute and I plopped her on top of the parachute and I was dragging it around the wood chip. And I stopped. And at that time I didn't necessarily, it wasn't an intentional stop to then try to call the language out of her. I just stopped. And then I looked over at her and she immediately was like, more. Mm. Like she signed and voiced more. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I looked at my classroom assistant and I was like, did you see that? And it was awesome because it was the first time that she had said anything on her own. And I was like, yes, please. And I just like started dragging the parachute again. And then, of course, stopped intentionally so that she would say it again. So then, so that was a pretty big moment. And so, of course, that like ties in all of the, you know, all of the like play schema. Right. And then I had another kid that, you know, so the part, a big part of my day is individualized tutoring, since all of my kids have communication IEP goals. There's vocabulary and speech and like sentence patterns and auditory comprehension, phonetic listening discrimination. So I work on all of these different IEP goals individually with my kids, because when you start to get into small groups and stuff, it tends not to be a situation where you can maintain attention.
Yeah.
For multiple kids, right?
For any preschool.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So working one-on-one with those kids is really awesome, because then I get to the point where I can like demonstrate, you know, a fair amount of mastery around, you know, consecutive days and things like that. And I can document that there's legit progress being made, which is what we like to do in special ed. So I was working specifically on having a little boy show me that he understood the difference between some kind of auditory comprehension thing. So like I had, I was singing happy birthday, or I was just saying his name. And I had this like really closed set, right? So he had to then demonstrate to me that he knew which one I was doing consistently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was really into cars. And so I ended up putting a little car on one side of my little tutoring desk. And I basically started using it as like a meter for him to sort of understand that this is a finite task. Like the car has to go from here to there. And if you touch the one that I've presented, then the car moves. And if you touch the one that if you touch something other than what I presented, the car goes backwards.
Wow.
So I started learning sort of different ways to incorporate, like really using the child's interest to give me a foundation, like a springboard, right, in which I could jump off of in order to be able to meet my objectives that I have to meet, right? So
yeah.
It was like very much so this give and take and working with individual kids. So as I've been, you know, learning, like, got it. I understand this child's currency. I know that I need to be able to do these things with that interest in mind. Then it's been really fun because I can kind of give myself permission to go deeper into those places and figure out how to give them real-time feedback in knowing that they're making progress visually that don't necessarily, you know, that doesn't necessarily rely on the language and the heavy, the complicated words to be able to describe that thinking process. Cause my kids are at such a limited communication profile that they can't understand or pay attention for that long. So just different things like that. So then I actually found, I mean, I had no idea when I started, you know, 5 to 7 years ago that play schema was a thing. Like, I encountered it, but I had no idea that it was, like, stuff that anybody had done research on. I had no idea that there were specific things that people had analyzed. And so I found some kind of awesome PDF that was, I think the person, was it Michelle? I can't remember who made it, but anyway, so after I found that, then I started looking at transporting, and then all of a sudden things just started clicking and like making sense. And I'm like, oh, I totally do that. I just didn't know that's what it was called, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I totally do enclosure and enveloping. I just didn't really realize that that was a thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and so all of a sudden things started coming together, and I was like, that's why this makes sense. That's why this is motivating for these kids, because this is a thing, you know? So, so then like I could see more of the, like all the different facets on this sphere of play, you know? And so then I really started going deeper into it that way. So like an example of that would be, so when I'm trying to get my kids to use a broader variety of linguistic functions, meaning like, can you answer a yes or no question? Can you do that? Can you request that you want something to be repeated? So can you say more, or can you go again, or can you request to share an object? Like if you're playing, you know, may I have that, or share please, or even telling somebody to wait. Like I have to really look at the different ways that my kids use language and try to broaden those and also deepen them at the same time. So, so one of the things I also started getting into was this idea of communication temptation.
What's that?
Which, right. So, this, I want to say it was like 1989. One of the dates that I've seen on some of the research that I've read by this, co-authored research article, Weatherby and Pizant, P-I-Z-A-N-T. And so I think a lot of it stems from, you know, kids that are on the spectrum, but it's just best practice. Like it's kids need a reason to communicate, right?
Yeah.
So the reason that, again, works or more works is because they want something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just common knowledge, but it's best practice for kids that are typically developing, but for kids that are like on the spectrum or have other communication delays or whatever, it's not just best practice. It's like required, you know,
right.
Like you have to do these things. And so, so then one of the things that I started sort of playing around with was like during snack time, I would buy tiny, tiny, tiny little Tupperware containers with little tiny lids that maybe fit like 5 Cheez-Its, you know? Right? Uh-huh. And so I would like pre-pack all of those and give them to all the kids, and then I would just sit back and wait.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so authentically they'd finish it and they'd like lift it up to me, and I, you know, and so then I would work with them on cueing and how are you going to be able to do that expressively. And so that started me down that whole realm of communication temptations, and since then I've been kind of slowly accumulating sort of a list of different communication temptations that I've tried to put in place in the classroom. Like at some point, I decided to hide all of their lunch boxes while they were at recess.
I love it.
And so they'd have to come in, and they're just looking around, but they're not using the word where, right? They're just looking around, and there's no way for them to actually try to figure out, like, to use language to gain more information, right? So then I was modeling, like, where or... I'd have my classroom assistant come in, and she'd model where. So as soon as they're seeing that, you know, my classroom assistant is doing that, and then she's getting assistance by asking that question, they started to do the same thing. So so then we started really. Then it became this awesome thing where, like, I was embedding, you know, prepositions. Like I was like, oh, I think your lunch might be under the trampoline.
Mm.
So do you know where the trampoline is? Do you know what a trampoline is? Do you know where that is? Do you know what under means? Like oh all of that gosh. Stuff. So then I was using visual schedules to, or sorry, like I was using visuals.
Sorry.
Oh, did I lose you?
No, we're here.
No, we're here.
Okay. So I was using visuals in closed set. So like supporting that auditory part with the visuals too. So I'd have a picture of a lunch under the trampoline, or I'd have a picture of a lunch inside the big cardboard box area, or I'd have a picture of a lunch underneath the stuffed animal in the library or something like that. So then what I would do is to deepen that listening practice, I would stand behind them and I would say, your lunch is under the box. And so then they would have to point to which one I said, right? Using their hearing aids or their implants or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if they got it right, then yes, they could go look, right? So
yeah.
I started playing around with that a lot, and that's been really awesome. And after they were able to do that, then we started moving into like playing hot and cold and teaching them that when I say cold, you got to walk away from wherever you are, because that all of that thinking process is, you know, way more abstract and not as representational. So you have to teach them how to play hot and cold, which is really fun sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also really hard if you don't have that immediate feedback.
Yeah.
If you're not even sure if they're getting the like receptive of what you mean.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's definitely more of a thing that I use with my older kids, you know, that have more language to be able to do that. And then what's cool with that is that you're constantly trying to figure out how to challenge that and take it even deeper. And so then it's fun because you're like, oh, you're freezing, you're in the North Pole, or you're wherever. Like knowing that that kid actually, you know, like maybe that kid's parents have signs to them since they're, you know, a year and a half old. So their language is way further along than somebody who hasn't really necessarily been signing, or if they haven't had access with implants, or, you know, just a variety of reasons why their language is delayed more than others. So
yeah,
my mind blown. Like Tiffany and I are sitting here like wide-eyed, like, oh my gosh, like this is a whole layer of I don't know, like
it's a whole layer of learning that you don't realize is happening all the time.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every day.
Well, and you had said that in your one of the Facebook messages that we had, where whenever anybody starts talking about special education, can you talk more about that? Where it kind of always tends to go to like talking about the autism spectrum and that ADHD, so much more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Allison and I were texting a little or messaging a little bit about this before the show. And I think there's this sort of when special education comes up, there's this weird stigma that kind of goes along with it, in that people immediately jump to either the immediate a child that might need so much help that they're not going to function in a regular preschool setting or in a general ed setting, or they jump to the place of, oh, that kid that has ADHD that's over medicated, and if we just put him in a play-based environment, all that goes away. But there's this huge part in the middle of the special education spectrum, not autism spectrum, but like this continuum where like direct instruction is really important for Allison in her classroom.
Right.
Because if you don't get the instruction of more.
Right.
And that's not concrete, then you can't move on. You can't do the next thing. Right. Am I saying this?
Oh, yeah. In an absolutely.
I mean, an eloquent PC way.
Yeah. I mean, even in knowing how to answer who, what, where, when, why questions. Like if I show you a picture of your own face as a child and I say who, they don't understand that. They say me, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I have to do that direct instruction to help them understand that that pronoun use is a big deal. That's what's expected when I say who, you know, that's like pre-literacy and how all that, you know, language is the biggest part of literacy, right? And the biggest part of pre-literacy. And I think too, a lot of times what happens is when you're not familiar with hearing loss, a lot of people will assume that, oh, well, you don't talk, so you must need to be in like a developmental preschool. And so,
yeah,
like I just learned about a little kid who had some kind of a physical injury and like lost his hearing completely, lost his hearing. And the people that were involved in his education decided that it would be appropriate to put him into a class with a whole bunch of kids that are autistic and that would be the best way to give him direct instruction. And us as, you know, deaf educators are going, wait, he just lost his hearing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
He just needs to be in a place where he has access to communication with peers and opportunity to practice social emotional stuff and to continue along with all of his academic growth in a way that he has access to. It doesn't necessarily mean that now all of his peers, you know, so there is this sort of like a leap, you know, where you just are like, I don't know how to instruct this child. Let's just clump him into this completely restrictive environment that we don't know, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Mm-hmm. I'm like completely, I don't know. I'm so like awestruck at what you do every day. Like it makes it me feel like I don't do anything like special, you know, like there's just this whole other world that I really was completely blind about. I'm just, yeah. Like
there are a lot of layers.
There's so many layers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of layers.
Yeah. Well, we're reaching the end of this episode, but don't worry. Allison will be back next week because I still have a lot of questions
for
her.
Yes, we do.
There are some things that came up in this episode, like play schema and communication temptation. And what is the type of sign language you use at your school, Allison?
We do signing exact English.
So we'll have links to all of those things listed on our private Q&A Facebook group.
Page. Yeah.
Yeah. Which if you haven't joined yet,
group.
Join it. Mm-hmm. And then you can have access to all this information related to this episode.
Yeah.
Allison, we've been doing a new thing at the end of episodes called
Tell Me Something Good. So you got to tell us something good.
Yeah. We don't mean to put you on the spot, though, so we can go first.
So this is like the alternative to like the what would you do?
Exactly. We've been feeling kind of down about society. At least I have. So I like to think about like what's something good that happened this week?
Yeah.
Something good that happened.
Well, so I've been on February break this week. And so I'll tell you something good in my like personal life.
Yeah.
And then I can also tell you something good around like, you know, kids and families and things like that.
Yeah.
So while I was down in California, I went on a trip with my mom and I was at an antique store and I found an antique toolbox.
Ooh.
And it was amazing. And I fell in love with it. And then I walked away from it because it was ridiculously expensive. And then my aunt was like, no, I'm buying that for you for birthday. So
it was
amazing.
Yeah.
It's like probably 100 years old. It's all wood. It's amazing. It's got these little tiny drawers that you pull out. And it's like a machinist, like a toolbox for a machinist. And so I carried it on as my carry-on.
That's so cool.
That's awesome.
I had it all wrapped up in cardboard, so when I put it through TSA, they were like, what's in here? I'm like, it's an antique toolbox.
Oh my gosh.
You know that common awesome. Carry on.
Yeah, you know, super common.
Okay, super save common. Your other
it,
something
right? It's,
oh
was a perfect, perfect fit into the overhead carry-on section.
Oh, so meant great. To be.
Yeah.
Yeah, meant to be.
Save your other one
for the next one.
Yeah, we'll hear about your other one on the next episode.
Yeah, so my other one. Okay. So,
Don't tell us.
Save the other one. Okay.
Save it.
Yeah. I'll tell you mine, though. It kind of goes along with yours. So we went to Tiffany's friend Savannah's baby school yesterday, which if you're listening to this, that was like 12 weeks ago. And Savannah goes, I have a present for you. She's a listener of the podcast. And she runs in the back room, brings it back. She's like, close your eyes. And so I closed my eyes and I was thinking, oh my gosh, what's she going to put in my hand? I was scared. And she sets something in my hand and I opened my eyes and it was like an old coffee mug with the Berenstain Bears on it. She's like, I just listened to your episode where you talked about the Berenstain Bears being your favorite. Oh, it was so sweet. And she found it at a thrift store for 50 cents. That's awesome. I love
That's
it.
Awesome.
Thanks, Savannah.
It's a cute mug.
It is. And Tiffany, you are next.
Since we're on the presents theme, yesterday we went to Powell's, and
which is a ginormous bookstore in Portland, bookstore. Like the huge. Biggest bookstore I've ever been in my life.
And we didn't even go all the way to the
top
floor.
I think we only made it to like a fourth of it.
Yeah,
and we were there for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have been stopping in every day since, not every day, every time I go to Powell's,
mm-hmm.
which is like once a week, let's be honest. I check to see if they have this cookbook that my husband wanted for Christmas and didn't get. And they had it yesterday. And then when we were recording this morning, I was like, Kurt, where'd you go? And he was just reading it cover to cover upstairs.
That is the cutest thing.
What's the cookbook?
It's called The Food Lab. And...
it's really thick.
It's like a cooking textbook.
Yeah.
Ah.
It won the Beard Award for Best Cookbook of the Year.
Mm.
Wow.
And
cool.
The guy who does it is featured on the podcast, The Sporkful, a lot. Sporkful is a great podcast. I'm going to plug it right now. Yeah. It's a podcast for people who love food and love to eat it, not necessarily love to cook it.
Oh.
So it's like an excellent podcast for me.
Very cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right.
Very
well,
cool.
Tiffany.
I like...
Oh, you want to add something to that? You like what?
Oh, I was just saying that. I love the wrap up. I love the alternative wrap up.
Yeah.
You leaving feeling good?
Yeah, it's good.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well, Kristen and Allison.
Well, Allison and Tiffany.
Kristen and Tiffany.
Yeah, it's been fun.
We'll see you next time on Q&A
with T and K.
This has been Q&A with T and K. Thank you for listening. From serious to silly, Tiffany and Kristen are eager to answer your questions. Just email them to q4tnk@gmail.com. That's q4tandk@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with another episode. Music by Kurt Pearsall, Tiffany's sweet, sweet hubby.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.